Out of the many variables that are affecting the teacher shortage in Illinois and across the nation, perhaps the largest one is children themselves. Are they different than they were a generation ago in important and fundamental ways that make teaching tougher or not? In this final part of the GLT series, Skipping School, we tackle the question whether and how kids have changed. Now, if you want certainty or even firm conclusions, most sources, including Illinois State University psychology professor Greg Braswell, say this story isn't going to give it to you.
We're very squishy, so I think a lot of times, parents and educators want concrete answers about how we learn and develop. But yeah, there's a lot of squishiness.
Braswell says studies are showing that kids hit the same developmental milestones at the same age as they did in previous generations. Rough times for reading, gaining ability to concentrate, emotional development milestones, all about the same. Ages of stages of brain development haven't changed in the aggregate for most children, though there are outliers. Karen Stevens agrees. She spent more than four decades in early childhood education, including as longtime head of the Illinois State University Child Care Center.
I absolutely do not think children have changed one iota. Their developmental needs for attachment, bonding, security, nourishment, nurturing has not changed for eons.
Other than biology-driven factors for children, though, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, students have changed.
Carl Gakey is a 16-year veteran Unit 5 teacher now at Normal Community West High School.
They've grown because our society has grown and changed, right?
Culturally, there are numerous themes and variables. Poverty, technology, family dynamics, and on and on and on. If you're looking for a handy metaphor to picture how much of a societal barometer children are, Gakey says, try this one.
It's like amphibians, right?
He says amphibians feel the effects of climate change long before other animals.
Because their skin is porous and they absorb water inside of them, and they are affected in a way different than other animals. And children are kind of like that.
Gakey says even the brains of children respond to stimuli as they develop in a stronger way than adults. Karen Stevens says the environment has changed our children.
And I think that has been the key factor.
Stevens says children now spend about 7 hours of screen time a day, even preschoolers. For the first time, we're raising a generation that will have a shorter lifespan than current adults because of obesity, a rise in diabetes. Another big change is a lack of kids having contact with any real green nature. Stevens says kids are loved but not trusted, perhaps protected too much.
I think that we've got some kids who aren't as confident. They question themselves more, meaning I can't do it, or maybe I can't do it, taking a bit of their courage away.
Kids, she says, live in a hostile environment in a very grassroots way.
I mean, let's face it, school starts up, and I've literally heard people saying, well, let's make bets on when this first school shooting's going to happen. Now, if that's become normal, if that's become something that we can joke about, that worries me.
Stevens also says children today are more indignant than they were a generation ago. She says they pay more attention to the adult world than the adults sometimes think, and they're capable of seeing the irony of going to a school with stickers on the door saying no guns allowed. Kids also pay attention to the lack of politeness or civility in public discourse in spite of the classroom messages they get. To the contrary, Unit 5 Spanish teacher Carl Gakey says he never thought society would regress to people marching in the streets with tiki torches shouting racial slurs.
They notice this. These are the role models. When we've got the President of the United States tweeting out horrible things about people, I mean, it's so hard to hear the First Lady talk about wanting to address bullying and then to see that is cyberbullying, what we see coming out of the President of the United States. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Other elements might matter more to how children perform and the pressures teachers face in the classroom. Jeff Hill is the superintendent of the Peoria Suburban Morton District. He has headed the largely urban and low-poverty Illinois State University lab schools. And years ago, he was a principal in the rural Olympia District.
We know poverty is really the number one indicator for low-achieving students. And that simply goes to the background, the life experiences that can be provided a student before they come to school.
That's not to say poverty is destiny in producing messed up kids, but psychology professor Greg Braswell says it is a factor.
You know, we go through cycles of poverty levels increasing and decreasing, and you know, some of the potential problems tied to that. There are a lot of traumas and difficulties that can be associated with poverty.
Poverty rates in central Illinois spiked upwards a few percent during and following the Great Recession, though in most areas those rates have subsided in recent years. Longer-term trends, though, show flat to falling per capita income in Illinois and many parts of the country. The amount of resources devoted to addressing the challenges of poverty also matter, and that's something lacking in Illinois in recent years because of the state budget crisis and political deadlock. Braswell says economic security matters not only in intellectual development and enrichment activities wealthier kids have access to, but in the emotional makeup of kids. There is a poverty penalty, and not just in the U.S. He says it's similar in many countries.
There have been studies suggesting that a lot of parents that are wealthier, some cases might be a little bit more permissive or want their children to be a little bit more creative and autonomous and be children that will, you know, eventually, you know, maybe want careers or be prepared for careers that involve some autonomy. Whereas parents that are more working class tend to maybe foster a little less of that.
Some educators believe society has also lost ways to create structure and self-discipline in the lives of students. Jeff Hill of the Morton District says the development of a norm of two-parent working families is one such element because there's less time for a parent to provide structure at home.
So when those habits are instilled and kids see that they work and that they bring a certain amount of success, then they're more likely to implement those habits when there's not structure around to help them implement it.
I don't buy it that there's less parenting time.
Karen Stevens says even in the era when more families had one parent in the home, not all that time was spent parenting. A big chunk of it was doing household management. That is more often automated now. For Stevens, a more important generational variable is that kids today have far less unstructured free play time and more scheduled activities. She agrees with Jeff Hill, though, that time is important for parents to give to children, and says she sees a positive there.
One of the biggest changes I saw in my career was the amount of involvement in true parenting of children. Dads are much more engaged, and that's only good news for our children, male or female.
Stephen says she has seen a change in divorce, too. The divorce rate has leveled off since the 1970s. More importantly, on the whole, Stephen says parents are doing better at managing their ex-relationships.
I've seen an awful lot of good co-parents who weren't good as marriage partners. But when they've separated or divorced, at least they're not just telling children, it's not your fault. They're showing children by not fighting continually, by sharing some responsibilities.
That's important because most experts say divorce can be what's called an adverse childhood experience, an ACE, or a trauma. Unit 5 teacher Carl Gakey says the Illinois Education Association is doing research with hospitals in the Chicago area and starting to recognize trauma in a different way.
Children that have a high number of these ACEs, their brains develop in a more flight or fight mode. The hormones and the chemicals in the brain they're flooded with them constantly. And so when the children come to us that have high number of ACEs, what we notice is that they're a little more reactionary and they tend to act a little bit differently.
For instance, if a child has a parent with addiction, domestic violence, or mental illness at home, school might well be their safe place. And if they get in a fight at school, Gakey says the old crime and punishment by suspension response is not the best way to handle it because it exposes the child to more trauma. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel says he believes the number of kids with multiple traumas is increasing and presenting challenges to classroom teachers. It's not yet clear whether there are more of these wounded kids or schools are doing better at recognizing them. What is certain, Morton Superintendent Jeff Hill says, is that it's affecting the way teachers have to handle kids and making educator lives less certain.
We're now having to pay way more attention to the why underneath the behavior as opposed to the actual behavior itself in a way of helping manage the class.
Hill says teachers used to deal with the conduct alone and expect that would fix the problem. That's no longer true. Now, it's not quite fair to say this is a new method for teachers.
Good ones always have. I mean, great ones always have. But I also think that there was this other level of you could manage your class through just dealing with conduct. You could be fairly successful doing that as a teacher and not get to the why all the time. There's more students now who need a more in-depth approach.
Getting to the why is part of the social and emotional learning educators must monitor, as well as reading, writing, and arithmetic. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel says teachers have to create a community within the classroom. He says it used to be there was no need for communities because you were there to learn, and if you didn't learn, that was your problem. Now, Daniel says, society can no longer afford dropouts because their chance of making a meaningful living is scant.
It is about ensuring that we're connecting with our students and forming relationships and working with those students who are isolated, who are feeling as if, what do I have to lose? Or are so angry that they're going to cause mass harm.
Daniel says research on student belonging shows the key factor is activities, not just sports, but clubs. He says there's a major return from 2 to 3 co-curricular activities, but diminishing returns on building relationships after 7+.
I don't care where the student lives, whether it be an inner city school, a suburban school district, or a rural school district, students are students. And they need to feel part of the school.
Most teachers and education theorists are also still grappling with how technology is changing students. And there's a lot of ambivalence. Unit 5's Carl Geike says those teaching now are not digital natives like their students.
When I was first beginning to teach, we hadn't invented cell phones. We hadn't invented the internet, really. All those things are new to us.
And in spite of efforts to adapt, embrace, and use, Geike says, adults look at tech differently than children do.
It used to be that you would look at a child's paper planner. That doesn't exist anymore, right? Not many people carry around paper planners. I do, and my colleagues make fun of me mercilessly. But I had students that would snap a picture of the assignment before they walked out the door. They're not writing it down. And so it was like a shift for me.
There's debate whether a lot of screen time delays development of social skills in children. A lot of teachers and childhood experts say they do see differences. But again, it's squishy. Early childhood expert Karen Stevens says technology can also enhance development of social skills by encouraging cooperation, sharing, and teamwork.
We haven't finessed technology yet. It still is in, I believe, in use with children in the guinea pig stage. And I'm hoping in 50 years that it will look much different than it looks now.
Another way teachers grope toward helping students use technology is that it allows more flexible use of time in ways that weren't possible before. Morton Superintendent Jeff Hill says it's easier to get a hold of classmates for team projects, easier to find information efficiently, but, Hill says, it's easier to be inefficient as well.
Just saw a study the other day about how iPads can be a distraction in the classroom unless there's a real concerted effort to teach students how to not be distracted by their device. We're not always thinking about the self-management that goes along with having a device.
Yes, children today are different in many ways than previous generations. And those differences are challenging for teachers who come from very different backgrounds than their charges do. This may also press some teachers to get out of the field. Unit 5's Mark Daniel finds a small silver lining, though. He says the Darwinian conditions that lead to teacher attrition and the teacher shortage may also have raised the level of the profession compared to years ago.
Yes, you had occasionally teachers that were, what I would say, outliers, unbelievable instructors, but that wasn't the norm. Today, I would say we have more excellent instructors, excellent teachers than we've ever had before.
The challenge remains for school districts to find enough of those teachers. You can hear the other stories in GLT's series on the teacher shortage at our website, skippingschool, wglt.org/skippingschool.